evening and welcome to the local news. Today is Thursday, April 10th. I'm Lauren Schmidt reporting for KMUD. In tonight's news, escaped burn triggers first wildland fire of the year in Mendocino. 15 months after Humboldt earthquakes, recovery continues. And College of the Redwoods to ditch problematic mascot and seeks community input. Stay tuned, news on those stories and more coming right up. We start tonight's news in Mendocino County, where the first wildland fire of the season occurred Wednesday near the 7,000 block of Mill Creek Road east of Ukiah, close to Cow Mountain. The report was first made to dispatch at 12:39 p.m., and within an hour, forward progress had been stopped. Smoke from the incident was visible on the alert wildfire cameras and triggered a rapid response from CAL FIRE's Mendocino unit. For more, we spoke with CAL FIRE's new battalion chief, Shane Lampkin, who brings over 20 years of experience to the Mendocino unit.
The fire was 3.98 acres. We did send a response of one helicopter, two crews, four engines, one water tender, and two chief officers. This response included a mutual aid agreement with Ukiah Valley, and they sent one engine, one water tender, and one chief officer. This fire was located off of Mill Creek Road in the Cow Mountain area, and the cause of this fire was an escape debris pile.
According to CAL FIRE's website, Cow Mountain has been a common site for wildland incidents. Between 2010 and 2017, records indicate that hundreds of acres have burned in the area. While the causes of those earlier fires weren't published in the data we found, CAL FIRE confirmed that yesterday's fire was the result of an escaped burn pile. Although burn permits are not currently required, CAL FIRE still urges all members of the public to follow safety guidelines and always ensure it's a legal burn day.
Of course, yes. With the season changing and us getting ready for summer, we encourage that everybody be in attendance while they are burning and that they have a water supply nearby, and that they have some sort of tool to help mitigate your burn in case things do get out of hand. Currently, we are allowing dooryard burning. That is without a permit. The only permit that you need right now is an air quality permit, and you need to call air quality to make sure that it is a burn day before burning. But we do offer those permits, and you can get them online. They're available, and they're going to be required here shortly. Usually right before the start of the burn ban, we require the permits. And we do encourage everybody to do their part and help out with fuel reduction and taking care of their properties, because that's what's important when it comes to fire season and having a large fire in the area. If you maintain your property, it'll help out with the firefighting efforts.
In closing, Chief Lampkin encourages the public to follow the Mendocino unit's newly revamped social media platforms for regular updates and public safety information.
Yeah, social media sites, our CAL FIRE Facebook page and our CAL FIRE Mendocino Instagram page, and I try and keep everybody updated. With this time of year, we're doing a lot of prescribed fires along with some of these vegetation fires that are starting to pop up as well. So to be able to see the smoke in the air and distinguish, hey, is that a vegetation burn, management burn, or is that an out-of-control vegetation fire, you can stay up to date with the information. So check it out, follow us, and if you need more information, don't hesitate to reach out.
With this first vegetation fire of the season, it may be a sign of what's to come as we enter the drier parts of spring and summer. That's why CAL FIRE no longer refers to fire season. Instead, they talk about a fire year. California is a fire-adapted landscape. For thousands of years, fire has occurred naturally and under indigenous traditional ecological knowledge. But decades of suppression have led to a buildup of fuels and overgrown vegetation. Fire is a natural and necessary part of the local ecosystem. So, it's not a matter of if, but when fire happens. Across the state, 653 wildfires have already occurred since the start of the year, resulting in nearly 60,000 acres burned, the destruction of over 16,000 homes, and 30 fatalities. CAL FIRE encourages everyone to prepare now. Helpful tips can be found online at readyforwildfire.org. Humboldt County's recovery from a late 2022 earthquake and its aftershocks is proceeding, but the pace is slower than the Board of Supervisors envisioned. KMUD's Daniel Mintz reports.
Updating Humboldt County's Board of Supervisors on recovery from the late 2022 and early 2023 earthquakes, representatives of nonprofit groups said work is ongoing, with four homes still awaiting repair. Fielding the update at its April 8th meeting, the board was told of the successes and challenges of the county's earthquake recovery effort. It's mostly focused on the city of Rio Del, which got the most damage when a 6.4 magnitude earthquake struck on December 22, 2022. A 5.4 magnitude earthquake on New Year's Day was among more than 200 aftershocks. County Public Information Specialist Cady Gallardo said more than 20 Rio Del building permits for repair are still active as, quote, long-term recovery takes time. The county created a federally sourced $1 million emergency fund for fixing homes, with $500,000 allocated for Habitat for Humanity. Of that, $250,000 remains to be spent. Camille Benner of Habitat for Humanity said the money needs to be used as reimbursements from other funders can be slow.
What we are requesting is that we can get the $250,000 and then just start construction on all of them and have the rest of the money expended before, if not by the end of April due to weather, definitely be by the end of May. And we're asking that because we are in, like every other nonprofit, with funds being restricted, we have millions of dollars that we have expended that normally come back as a reimbursement that we have not been reimbursed on. So we are not in a position right now to cover the construction costs, and I don't want to leave contractors waiting to be reimbursed. So these families are approved. They have all of their paperwork in, and they have waited an incredibly long time, and they're very, very excited. And they're also, when they call, incredibly grateful to all of you, Board of Supervisors.
Habitat for Humanity is part of a group of organizations working on recovery, with total funding for earthquake-related repairs at $1.9 million from a variety of sources. Kerry Venegas of Changing Tides Family Services said recovery's scope of work expanded as the extent of damage was confirmed.
The challenge with recovery is that you don't know what you don't know until you start actually doing the work. You may find things that are additional damage when you start lifting up a house to look at the foundation, and then you find out that you have some damage to pipes, and then you find out that you may need a French drain because everything has shifted so much in the natural disaster. But of the unique 37, so they may have had more than one type of support, 33 of them have already been completed from the unmet needs side. Four are still in process. There are three additional cases that we're sharing and leveraging funding with Habitat. And just a little bit under $450,000 has gone out directly in support. And that means repairs and other things.
There was some discussion by supervisors on the length of time and the complicated process for repairs. Board Chair Michelle Bushnell said it's been a learning experience.
I don't think that the process worked as well as we'd hoped. I know that the money for the motel vouchers we did get through OES, thank you, Ryan, and Cal OES, we were able to get some of that money back. If we have to go through this again, maybe there is a different process. We've learned a lot, I'll say that. And I continue to get calls from folks in Rio Del that they didn't qualify, they didn't this, they didn't that, or they did their repairs themselves so they could get back in their homes and that makes them not qualified. And so it's been a very frustrating process. I think when this board allocated the $1 million, we had hoped that that money would go, well, first of all, we needed to shelter people right away that didn't have shelters, which included some of those yellow tagged homes too, because they didn't have water and they didn't have sewer, but it wasn't off the foundation. But I think our board had hoped that we would touch more homes than we did. And $1 million doesn't go very far, and there's a lot of red tape.
33 homes have been repaired so far. 90 homes were red tagged, meaning left uninhabitable following the earthquakes, and 350 homes were damaged. In Eureka for KMUD News, this is Daniel Mintz.
College of the Redwoods has announced it is seeking input from students, faculty, and the greater community on its effort to rebrand the school's mascot, the Corsair, something the school president says lacks local relevance and carries a problematic history. In the fall of 2024, College of the Redwoods formed a mascot task force and invited suggestions from students, faculty, and staff. Submissions are currently being evaluated based on cultural sensitivity, local significance, and alignment with the school's mission. For more, we spoke with CR President Dr. Keith Flamer.
Almost 9 months ago, a community member and a student came to me and lodged a complaint or let their voice be known of what the Corsair stands for and how that they wanted us to look at whether the Corsair, as a pirate who was involved in slaving and slavery, if that reflects the values of the institution as we move forward. Right. And so we started this effort 9 months ago prior to the November election. And so we asked the question of whether Corsair does indeed reflect who CR is moving forward, but also does it reflect the values, but also the location of which we operate. For example, we are on Talawa land, Yurok land, and Wiat land. And so whether Corsair is reflects exactly where we are in this particular community. So that was really the impetus of the conversation and really the surveys.
While the school is still actively gathering feedback, three finalists have emerged, with the Wolf standing out as a leading option, especially among CR athletes. Notably, the Wolf was submitted as a mascot suggestion by the Wiat Tribal Council, whose ancestral lands include the Eureka campus and surrounding areas.
So a few months ago, we had a task force who narrowed down, after lots of input and conversation, narrowed it down to three particular names. A Kraken, which I understand is a brand in Seattle in terms of soccer team. The Kraken, the Condor, because Condors does indeed reflect the symbol for the Euro tribe, but also the Wolves, because that does also reflect the land in which the Eureka campus is located. There was a wolf house on this campus in Wiat legend that we wanted to honor. But also I wanted to go back a little bit and say that this effort was not to dishonor the history of Corsairs in part of CR, and not to dishonor the community who values the history of CR and the name Corsair itself. So it was not to dishonor the history of it. It's just to ask questions on whether it's appropriate as we move forward as an institution.
The CR Board of Trustees recently postponed final approval of the new mascot during its April 1st meeting, citing the need for more time to gather input. An online questionnaire is currently being circulated to collect feedback from students, faculty, staff, and the public.
Certainly. So we did send a survey out to the community, faculty and staff and students on April 4th. And we put a deadline of May 4th just to get people to submit some ideas. And that particular end date was to coincide with the end of the semester. Because I know that once after that first week of May, students and faculty are focused on just getting ready for finals, writing those last tests and putting in those final grades. So we wanted to coincide with the end of the semester. And as we move forward, what we want to do is take more time to assimilate all the information and not rush forward to give a recommendation to the board yet, because we really want to talk it through to see what's best for the college and what's best for the community itself. So I don't have an end date of when all this process will be done. I want to make sure that we have lots of conversation and understand the consequences, the pros and cons of moving forward.
As for how the school plans to integrate the new symbolism, Dr. Flamer says it's simpler than you might think.
Yeah, so actually it wouldn't affect us that much because we very rarely use the word Corsair on uniforms or in writing of any sort, right? And so it would just be a new branding that we would implement. So we really don't use Corsairs now. We use CR for the tree and all of our athletic information, but also branding in terms of the whole institution. So we usually use All College of the Redwoods or just plain Redwoods. So very little branding that has to be done. We did a calculation the other day and found out that if we were to change from Corsairs to anything else, it would cost about $500 to make that branding change, because as we know, most things that are done these days are electronic. So that's easy to transition. But I'm also conscious that making that transition isn't about money. It's about honoring people and honoring the thoughts and the history of this particular area. So I'm not in any rush to upset the apple cart, if you will, but I am concerned that CR is not linked to historically and historical problematic branding, but we look forward to what CR is all about moving forward.
College of the Redwoods has already embraced tribal partnerships, something evident the moment you step on campus, where visitors are greeted in Salatluk, the Wiyot language. The college's main campus resides on unceded Wiyot land, and Dr. Flamer emphasized that CR is committed to continuing its collaboration around cultural education and inclusion.
Where there'll be ample opportunity to collaborate with the Wiyot tribe, but also Yurok and Talua, right? Because all of our sites are on land that was appropriated from them, right? And so we want to honor that history. So we will always work with our tribes, our tribal partners to move forward. There'll be other opportunities. For example, we're looking at naming opportunities for buildings and rooms. So those things are important to us.
Sharing his final thoughts, President Flamer encourages a thoughtful and inclusive decision-making process and reiterated that the school will continue to seek input from employees and students.
Again, I want to make sure that everyone understands that asking the question and engaging in the conversation about branding of the institution is not a way to erase the history of Corsairs. But it's just to simply ask the hard question, is what does College of the Redwoods want to be associated with as we move forward in today's society and as we continue to educate our future students as well.
College of the Redwoods has launched a public comment portal open until May 4th, where community members can submit feedback on the proposed rebranding. You can find a link to that portal on our website, kmud.org. In state news, California court hears challenge to State Farm's near $1 billion trade hike request. Advocates say insurer gave no reason for hike and doesn't need the money. Kennedy Coelho shares this report.
State Farm Home Insurance appeared in a California court Tuesday to defend its request for an emergency $921 million rate hike. This would raise homeowner premiums by an estimated $600 a year. Carmen Balber, executive director at Consumer Watchdog, says they are taking them to court, saying there is no reason provided for the rate hike, which is required under California law.
At its basic, State Farm is asking for consumers to pay now, and they'll try to justify the rate hike later. And that is exactly the opposite of how California rules work, which require insurance companies to come in, open their books, and justify rate increases before they take effect.
The rate hike request comes after the expensive climate disasters in Southern California. Democratic State Senator Scott Wiener introduced legislation in January that would make fossil fuel companies responsible for damages related to climate disasters after the Los Angeles wildfires. It would allow insurance companies and victims to sue the companies for lying about the safety of their products, allowing insurance companies to get their money from the fossil fuel companies. Consumer Watchdog alleges that State Farm is leveraging the wildfires to get their request approved. Balber says this is not reason enough to justify the rate hike.
State Farm has explicitly said it has the money in the bank to pay LA wildfire claims. What this rate hike is seeking is for California consumers to rebuild State Farm's bank account. But that's not what insurance rates are for. Insurance rates are to pay future claims, not rebuild a company's bank account or bolster its credit rating.
Balber wants to emphasize how much this would affect consumers. She said that rates would go up for homeowners, renters, and landlords by over 15%. She also said that it is not the consumer's job to help the company keep its money, but the responsibility of the parent company. She urges Californians to push back on this.
We are urging the Department of Insurance judge to reject this increase because the company has not justified it and make the company open its books and back up its claims. Consumers might be interested to know that they can watch this hearing live on the Department of Insurance website or actually go in person to the hearing to hear State Farm make its case for why Californians should pay hundreds and hundreds of dollars more for State Farm insurance going forward.
The hearing will continue for the rest of the week. For KPFA News, I'm Kennedy Coelho.
In national news, Trump announces pause on tariffs except China. Democrats say damage is done and uncertainty remains. Christopher Martinez reports.
President Donald Trump's trade war turmoil kicked into high gear over the last 24 hours, leading up to his surprise announcement Wednesday that he's putting a 90-day pause on most of the new tariffs, except for the new tariff on China. He made the announcement at a White House photo opportunity with auto racing champions. He invited questions for the champions, but the reporters had other things in mind.
Can you walk us through your thinking about why you decided to put a 90-day pause?
Well, I thought that people were jumping a little bit out of line. They were getting yippy, you know? They were getting a little bit yippy, a little bit afraid, unlike these champions.
Trump touched on a host of issues. Rigged election, Biden failures, crazy Nancy Pelosi. But on the tariffs, he says he was being flexible because, he says, he saw people getting queasy. It was a big change from what Trump was saying just the night before when he said of the tariffs, "I know what the hell I'm doing." He spoke at a Republican fundraising dinner where he gave a succinct explanation of the reasoning behind his tariffs.
They've ripped us off left and right, but now it's our turn to do the ripping.
At that point, the stock market had tumbled, countries targeted for tariffs were threatening retaliation, and Democrats and even some Republicans were urging Trump to pull back. But Trump insisted his moves were having results.
I'm telling you, these countries are calling us up, kissing my ass. They are dying to make a deal. Please, please, sir, make a deal. I'll do anything. I'll do anything, sir.
But then came Wednesday, when Trump abruptly backed down on his tariffs on most nations for 90 days, though he did raise his tax rate on Chinese imports to 125%, while China announced new 84% tariffs on U.S. imports. It was seemingly an attempt by Trump to narrow what had been an unprecedented trade war between the U.S. and most of the world into one between the U.S. and China. Global markets surged on the development, but the precise details of Trump's plans were not immediately clear. There still appear to be 25% tariffs on autos, steel, and aluminum, with more imports set to be tariffed in the weeks ahead. The pause came as a relief to many, but Democratic senators say the damage has been done and the uncertainty remains. Senate Democratic leader Chuck Schumer of New York says Trump seems to be playing a game of red light, green light with the economy, adding, "The Trump slump is upon us."
Donald Trump is feeling the heat from Democrats and across America about how bad these tariffs are. He is reeling, he is retreating, and that is a good thing. We are going to continue to put the heat on him because there are still much damaging tariffs in place.
Schumer was speaking at a Senate Democratic news conference on Trump's trade policies. The Democrats said Trump is making his policies by whim, with harmful effects for businesses, consumers, and the economy. Senator Macy Hirono is a Democrat from Hawaii.
This is like he's throwing the dice. It's a crapshoot to him. He thrives on the fear and chaos that he creates. Do we get it? He enjoys it. And he's going to keep doing it, folks. There are going to be more lawsuits, more chaos. This is what we're going to need to contend with, I guess, for the next 3 years. And we need to fight back.
And it's not just the tariffs. Hirono links that to other Trump actions.
Well, frankly, ever since he got elected, it's been one damn thing after another. So governing by executive order, most of them are illegal. There are over 100 lawsuits now to prevent him from doing all these things that he shouldn't even be doing. But the result of all this is chaos. And when we talk about chaos, it actually impacts real-life people.
While the total effects of Trump's on-again, off-again tariffs remain to be seen, one thing is clear. It's united Democrats and fueled their push for action. Hirono says we each have a responsibility to, in her words, fight back against this cruel bully.
Everybody needs to stand up because Trump loves the fact that people bow to his cruelties, and we're fighting back.
Reporting for Pacifica Radio News KPFA, I'm Christopher Martinez.
That's all for tonight's broadcast. Thank you for listening. Thanks to our engineer, and thanks to our reporters, Daniel Mintz, Kennedy Coelho, and Christopher Martinez. KMOD News is online. You can find us on KMOD.org and now streaming on most podcast platforms, where you can download our stories and newscasts for offline listening during your rural commute. Reporting remotely for KMUD, I'm Lauren Schmidt.